Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Wednesday, June 16th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Scott.
And I'm Molly Jackson.
You've probably seen news reports about the 15 elephants trekking across southwest China's Yunnan province. These peripatetic pachyderms have traveled 300 miles over the past year and are now on the outskirts of Kunming, a city of 4.5 million people. China just recently started 24-hour monitoring. More than 300 people and 18 drones have been deployed to track the herd, set up roadblocks, and lately, leave food, pineapples and corn, in an attempt to steer them away from the urban areas. Some 3,500 people were evacuated from their homes Saturday as the elephants approached, the Xinhua News Agency reported. No one knows why these Asian elephants are migrating so far. Wildlife experts suggest the unusual behavior could be a lack of food, overcrowding in their home preserve, or a loss of habitat. Still, this fascinating cross-country stroll is a source of endless amateur speculation. Maybe this herd just needed to stretch its legs and take in a few sights. Perhaps it's a case of enduring curiosity or a journey of self-discovery, or communal wanderlust. When I asked my 8-year-old niece what was going on, she pondered and, after a moment, smiled. Her answer was as plausible as any biologist's. "Why did the elephants cross road after road?" she asked. "Because they weren't chicken," she giggled. Now, today's stories. Our first story, the conversation between Joe Biden and Vladimir Putin, was constructive, said the Russian president. Ultimately, it may amount to little, or it may be a modest start for progress on nuclear arms control and cybersecurity.
The much-anticipated summit between U.S. President Joe Biden and Russian President Vladimir Putin had little sense of unity or common purpose. Yet despite the absence, even of a concluding joint press conference, U.S. officials say the two leaders' three-plus hours of talks laid the groundwork for areas where the two adversaries can work together. As a sign that both sides see a need to try to put tense relations back on better footing, the leaders agreed to return their respective ambassadors to Washington and Moscow. Some in the United States had judged the summit to be premature and likely to primarily serve Mr. Putin's interest. "Mr. Biden has no illusions about the challenges of working with Mr. Putin," White House officials say, but he concluded that airing differences was still the better course. "It's always better to meet face to face," Mr. Putin said while seated alongside Mr. Biden before their first meeting. Mr. Biden agreed, declaring at his closing press conference, "There is no substitute for face-to-face between leaders. None." The Russian president, at his press conference, characterized the discussions as constructive and said he considers the glimmers of confidence I saw between us as the principal result of this meeting. This story was reported by Howard LaFranchi in Geneva for The Monitor.
Last summer's popular pro-democracy protests have faded. With Russian help and a weak response from Europe, Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko has strengthened his crackdown on the opposition. But there are a few creative, resilient pockets of resistance.
The May 23rd hijacking of a passenger plane by Belarus to seize a critic of President Alexander Lukashenko may have stirred the European Union to react to the man called the last dictator in Europe. But for many months, Belarus has steadily been shifting into de facto martial law. Thousands have been detained in connection with protest activities, and nearly 500 political prisoners are behind bars. Poland and Lithuania shelter many who fled. Those left in Belarus live in a climate of fear. Analysts question whether fresh sanctions will actually help the situation. And while the EU responded quickly to the Ryanair flight's interception and the arrest of a Belarusian journalist on board with condemnations and flight bans, analysts say that the bloc has been largely ineffective at constraining Mr. Lukashenko. Germany and other European countries have never refrained from buying Belarusian oil, potash, and related products that directly fund the regime. And preventing European companies from selling in Belarus would potentially allow Turkish and Russian companies to step into the vacuum. Restrictions alone have never been an ultimate magic wand, says independent analyst Pavel Hanchuk. A combination of external pressure and internal national mobilization is the key. The future of Belarus can be determined only by its citizens. This story was reported by Lenora Chu in Berlin and Dominique Segal in Switzerland for The Monitor.
While G7 nations welcomed the U.S. back into a global leadership role, our London columnist observes they are skeptical that America's fractured democratic system can deliver on President Biden's promises on climate, infrastructure, and governance.
It's a tough job that President Joe Biden has set for himself and America to lead the way in promoting democracy against autocracy on the international stage. He found U.S. allies receptive to the idea when he met them in Europe this week and last. But his trip has made another message clear. His task will not be easy. That's largely because many foreign leaders and their citizens are voicing skepticism about America's democratic health. One recent global poll found that while 75% of respondents trusted Mr. Biden to do the right thing on international affairs, only 17% thought America was setting a good example for democracies worldwide. To promote democracy, Mr. Biden will have to prove that it meets people's needs, that it works. He has set before Western nations ambitious goals on climate change and building new infrastructure for poor countries. The trouble is that the domestic American version of these goals, the American Jobs Plan, is currently mired in congressional gridlock. That raises a question. How can an American president convince the world that democratic governance can deliver effective and ambitious policy if he's unable to make good on that promise at home? This column was written by Ned Temko in London for The Monitor.
In our Global Progress Roundup this week, we see women taking key leadership roles in the Louvre, the Pentagon, and as Miami's first ever chief heat officer. We also see how a Head Start program boosts survival rates for Australia's endangered wallabies. You can find our full list of points of progress by Lindsay McGuinness in today's issue. In this interview with Gavin Larson, author of Being a Ballerina, she looks at success from the perspective of the worker bee dancer. She also debunks some of the myths and misconceptions surrounding ballet.
Gavin Larson's commitment to dance started early and carried her through a rewarding, nearly two-decade career. In her memoir, Being a Ballerina, The Power and Perfection of a Dancing Life, she upends pop culture narratives about big-name stars and competition among dancers, revealing the everyday moments that build a life in dance. Her memoir honors the day-in, day-out dedication of thousands of dancers and their mutually supportive community. In sharing her insights, Ms. Larson wants to demystify dance and make it more accessible. I hope the book gives ballet a more universal appeal. Everyone can dance, and everyone should dance, she says. This story was reported by Karen Campbell for The Monitor.
Now, commentary from the Monitor's editorial board on increases in giving in the last year. Reports out of Myanmar indicate a country on the verge of economic collapse and possible civil war. Yet, despite this adversity, the people of Myanmar are living up to their reputation as one of the world's most altruistic people. According to other reports, they have stepped up donations of food and money for both poor people and the protesters. The Southeast Asian country is just the latest example of loving kindness rising to the occasion in turbulent times. In the United States, which last year saw three great upheavals, a recession, a pandemic, and racial justice protests, charitable giving reached record levels. Americans gave $471 billion, or a 3.8% increase over the previous year when adjusted for inflation. Worldwide last year, more than half of adults helped someone they didn't know, the highest level ever recorded, according to the 2021 World Giving Index. The health of a democratic society may be measured by the quality of functions performed by private citizens, 19th century Frenchman Alexis de Tocqueville remarked after observing American society. But a society's future can also be judged on its ability to respond to adversity with compassion and generosity. That's our news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Thanks for joining us. Come back tomorrow. We're reviewing two films that look at the childhoods of famous athletes. We'd also like to invite you to meet the Humanitarians Solving Community Problems. Meet your fellow Monitor subscribers. Join the conversations at our Community Connect page. If you visit csmonitor.com/community, you'll find panel discussions, Q&A interviews, and audio reporter profiles. They're all included in your subscription. It's our way of connecting you with the work of Good Samaritans in the world. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how understanding and living the truth of what we are as children of God, divine love, brings us satisfaction that materialism can never match. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. Finally, a grace note of gratitude to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton and Tara Adhikari.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor, copyright 2021.